Nuketown Radioactive number 70 for Thursday, July 17th, 2008. In this episode of Nuketown Radioactive, I talk about the big game at Shea Stadium, update folks on my summer reading list, including The Lathe of Heaven, Wizard's First Rule, The Subtle Knife, and The Golden Globe, take a look at Dark Horse Presents' new preview of Solomon Kane, The Nightcomers, talk a little bit about PodCamp Philly coming up in September, and geek out about the Star Wars role-playing game. Welcome to Nuketown Radioactive. I'm your host, Ken Newquist, and this is the occasional podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of geekdom. And the podcast sounds a little rougher this time around, a little tinnier. That's because I'm recording it on my MacBook Pro's internal microphone because I forgot to bring my real microphone with me on my business trip that I am presently on. I am currently attending Moodle Hack Doc Fest, which is kind of an ad hoc little workshop slash conference that we put together. A couple of different small liberal arts colleges got together to basically work on Moodle, debug some stuff, come up with some fixes, do a little bit of module development, do a whole bunch of documentation, and basically just kind of work through some issues that we expect we might have in the fall. It's a really great opportunity to just learn more about Moodle itself, really get into the code, and get some work done with some folks who are quickly becoming good friends. It's been a real treat, I think, to go to these things. This is the second one we've had this year. The previous one was held at the college where I work in January. And it's really nice to go to a conference where, well, not even a conference. It's I don't know exactly what to call it except for Hack Doc Fest. It's really nice to go to an event where everybody just whips out their laptops and starts working on code, you know, or starts working on documentation. And you're talking about some of the more, I guess you could say, philosophical aspects of Moodle. You know, does this work in terms of our institution? Does this work in terms of what we're trying to accomplish? And it's just a really nice feeling to, you know, kind of roll up your sleeves and be in a room with a bunch of smart people and work on Moodle. So that was pretty cool. Let's see. As I record this, Hack Doc Fest is actually winding down, but we already have plans for another one probably later this year. So I'm probably not this year, but probably early next year. But man, yeah, I'm pleasantly tired because, you know, it's been kind of busy. I did make the mistake of staying up too late on, let's see, Tuesday night watching the All-Star game, which went, 15 innings only to watch my National League lose, but it was worth watching it. I just have a really hard time turning off extra innings games when it comes down to it. I mean, it's a character flaw, if you will. But in any case, the other things we've done here, I've gone out to dinner almost every night. Actually, I guess I've gone out to dinner every night, which is a nice change of pace from, you know, just being back home. And tonight I went out with some folks and we saw Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, which I really enjoyed. And at some point, maybe tomorrow while I'm flying back to Easton, I'll work on a review of it. But all in all, it's been a good trip. Now, before going on this trip, I did finally get to do what I've been talking about doing for months now, which is go to Shea Stadium to see a Mets game. And it was absolutely fantastic. I mean, it was crazy, but I got to see the Mets win, and I got to see a pretty wild game. We got there, I think, probably about 5 o'clock, we drove into Port Authority, then we parked at the Port Authority parking lot and took the 7 train from Grand Central Station over to Shea Stadium. So all told, it probably took me about 2 hours to get there from Easton. Once we got there, they were letting us in, but none of the food places were open, which sent everybody's stomachs just growling as we could smell all these Italian sausages and stuff being cooked. We couldn't actually eat any of it. It was a crazy day for me because I got up at, I think, about 3 o'clock that morning to work on a Moodle upgrade for work. I finished doing everything and went home around 10, got like a pseudo nap, went back to work, had to deal with a last minute Moodle emergency involving a whole bunch of spam emails that accidentally got sent out by Moodle. Not real spam, but messages that had apparently kind of built up over time and hadn't been sent because of the cron. You don't really want to know. But suffice it to say that it was a very stressful, tiring morning. So then we headed out to Shea Stadium. We get there at 5. We smell the food cooking and unfortunately cannot eat just yet. But things slowly opened up and we got a chance to, like, you know, go out onto the stadium, find our seats, watch batting practice. And this was all very good, except we've had a dark portent, which was the storm clouds overhead. We knew there was a chance of rain and we just kind of toughed it out. There was speculation on our parts that we might end up having the game canceled and might have to come back the next day, which, you know, two trips to Shea Stadium in the course of a week would not have been a problem for me. I would have happily done it again. So what ends up happening is that these storm clouds roll in, it starts raining, they have to bring the tarps out onto the field to cover things up, batting practice is over. So not long after this, probably about an hour or so, they take the tarps back off. The game starts promptly at 7:10, just like it was supposed to. And we go through, the first 5 innings, I think, without any run, or the first 4 innings without any runs. Then bottom of the 4th, Ramon Castro, with 2 men on, hits a home run out of Shea Stadium, which was just, you know, it's great to go to a baseball game and see a home run. It's just fantastic to be watching the ball's trajectory and seeing it go out in person was just completely awesome. But it got better because now at the top of the 5th, the storm clouds are rolling in once again, and they're getting very dark. They're getting very gloomy. We're talking, the foothills of Mount Doom, kind of dark and gloomy here, right? And then the rain starts to fall, and we've got oh man, who is pitching? I can't believe I've forgotten this. I should have taken better notes. But in any case, I think it was Perez. I think it was Oliver Perez. But anyway, so the rain is coming down, and Perez has 2 strikes. He has 2 outs. He needs to get this final strike in order to make the game count, right? So that if the rain continues throughout the rest of the night, it's actually an official game. So in the pouring down rain, the rain is coming down almost so hard that we can't see the other side of the stadium. And we can barely see him. He throws a ball, gets a strike in the pouring down rain. I mean, it was very dramatic. It was just a, you know, something just like something you'd see in a movie, you know. So that was just very, very cool. So then everybody takes refuge inside Shea Stadium. The people on the upper decks climb to the very top of the stadium to get undercover. Rain comes down for 40 minutes, and the most interesting thing about this, kind of otherworldly, just very, very alien, I think I would say, is that this was all happening at night. It was about 7 o'clock. It was getting really dark out. You know, we had these terrible, gloomy, overbearing storm clouds overhead. So you've got all this rain coming down and these sheets and threads of rain. And it's the thing that really was just kind of amazing was that all of the stadium lights were on. So you could see the rain falling from the top of the stadium down onto the field. And the thing that was cool is that you never really get to see rain illuminated like this. So you could actually see the threads of rain just kind of forming, and just, it was ghost-like, ethereal. It was just fantastic. I mean, it was amazing to watch, despite the fact that we were all soaking wet from watching Perez throw this amazing pitch, right? So after 40 minutes, the rain finally lets up. It cools off. The moon even comes out, and they start the game up again. And ultimately, we get another 4 innings of baseball, and the Mets score another 2 runs, and they win. And, you know, we get back home, I think, at around midnight. It was just fantastic. It was everything that I was hoping it would be and more, and it totally blew away the last time I went to Shea Stadium, partly because it was such a great game, partly because I'm so much more into baseball than I was when I went there in high school, and ultimately because I had really good seats. Our seats, although they cost us, I think, about $70 a piece, we're actually field level. We were probably about 30 seats back from the field, and it was just awesome. You know, we were able to sit there, see people's faces, actually get to see the action. The seats weren't quite as good as when we went to the Coliseum to see the Athletics play back in March, I think, when I was in San Francisco for a business trip. But They were still pretty good seats. And it was just, wow. It was just really, really fantastic. I had a great time. So there is more baseball in my future. Once I get back home, actually, I need to sit down and figure out exactly when my family is going to be able to go to see the Iron Pigs play, which is, as I said before, our local AAA affiliate of the Phillies. They're actually winning games now. They at one point were something like 2-30. They've now gotten considerably better. They're still in the basement, but I think they've got at least something like 20 wins to their name. So that is a nice improvement. And after going to Shea, I'm really excited to go to a AAA game, particularly at this stadium, and just see the difference, you know, get some good seats and see how, see how the AAA experience differs from the Major League one. And I can't wait to take Jordan to a baseball game. She was really excited to go, and she was actually upset that I went to Shea Stadium without her. She was kind of sad when I got home, and she wanted to know why I didn't take her with me. Yeah, I was in a bit of the doghouse with my daughter over that one, but I think I'll make it up to her with the Iron Pigs game. Something else I'm going to be doing this summer, which wasn't really in my summer plans before, or actually I forgot to mention it actually, is Dorney Park. My daughter is really excited to go to Dorney Park, which is our local amusement park in the Lehigh Valley, and I'm not exactly sure when I'm going to go, but probably sometime in August. She and I are going to go out there and see what we can see. I've never been to Dorney Park, and I don't quite know what to expect in terms of, you know, younger kids' activities. I know that there's a Snoopy Land or something like that. So there's kid-oriented rides, and I know there's a number of water rides, but I don't think she's going to want to go on the really big flume kind of rides where you go splashing down them on your back. I don't think she's going to be into that. But, you know, something like the more floating things, or maybe the wave pool, I think she might be into those, but we'll kind of play it by ear and see how things work out. Now, the other thing that is going to be coming up that I have been kind of planning this summer, well, I shouldn't say planning, I started to kind of get the ball rolling on this because, well, it's a Nuketown tradition, it's a tradition for my gaming group. That's right, NukemCon is back. This is our homegrown gaming convention that my friends and I basically hold in one of our houses. We haven't quite figured out exactly where we're going to host it this year. And we invite some of our friends and the whole gaming group, and we get together for 3 days of solid gaming, which is pretty darn cool. We came up with this tradition after a couple of years went by without us going to Gen Con, and we just felt the need as a gaming group to kind of have that kind of, group bonding, I guess you could say, you know, the kind of friendly experience that we had when we would go to Gen Con and just be able to geek out for a couple of days and not have to get all stressed about work. Just kind of put all that stuff on the back burner and just enjoy being with your friends, drink some good beer, play some good games, just have fun. So this time around, we're actually going to be doing some more of a Western themed NukemCon. Games that are currently on tap are Deadlands Reloaded, Firefly, Aces and Eights, Shattered Frontiers, which actually just won Role-Playing Game of the Year at the Origin Awards, and possibly even Dogs in the Vineyard and maybe Spirit of the Century. I don't know. I've gotten some interest from my guys on playing those two games, so we'll see how that shakes out. There's a fair amount of... I guess my problem with Spirit of the Century right now is I think it's an awesome game, but I want to kind of take some time and see if I can figure out how to condense it down into a scenario that my friends can play without having to get worried about over all of the rules. It is designed to be a pickup game, but it's a pretty kind of hefty pickup game. So I want to try and recreate the experience I had at Gen Con. And to do that, I think I just need to kind of strip things down to their bare essentials and focus on that. But we just kind of have all of these Western-themed role-playing games lying around. And I really can't wait to try and play them. I made a convincing argument to the guys that, you know, we have these games. In one case, we had two guys bought Aces and Eights at Gen Con last year just because they thought it was such an awesome book. It's an awesome game from talking to the Kenzer folks. It would just be a crying shame not to play this. And with Deadlands Reloaded, I've always been interested in Deadlands, but never had a chance to play it. And our group in general is really into Savage Worlds, so it's a good fit. Of these, I don't know which We won't end up playing Firefly. I don't know. Everybody really liked Battlestar Galactica, and I'm hoping I can parlay that into getting a Firefly game together. But I suspect if anything drops off the radar, it could be Firefly. But again, we'll see. I haven't actually sat down and figured out what the schedule is for the convention yet, and I think it's going to be really just a question of who's available when and if I can get just enough people together to play a game of Firefly. Now, it won't be all Western stuff. In addition to Spirit of the Century, I'm looking to run one or two sessions of Dungeons & Dragons, probably Friday, Saturday night. And this is probably going to be upper-level play, which can be tough. And to that end, we're actually forming kind of a, I guess you could call it a working group within my gaming group, which is dedicated to trying to figure out the best way to play D&D at a higher level. We have a lot of higher level characters in the range of like 13th to 16th level, and we don't really play them because we're kind of gun shy about doing upper level stuff because we've found ourselves getting bogged down time and time again. So what I proposed to them was the Asgard Project. Notice the whole godhood angle, where we're basically going to get a couple of volunteers together to play on a Sunday night and just focus on the rules, focus on what is going to make the game as streamlined as possible. And then when we get together at NewcomCon, we'll put those suggestions into practice. We have a couple that we were using before that I think showed good potential, like the I think it was our fast gaming initiative, which was basically saying you have to make your decision in 10 to 30 seconds. I think 30 was the absolute limit. And if you don't know what you're going to do, we go on to the next person and we just keep moving things along as quickly as possible. Trying to eliminate cross talk at the table. I think one of the things I would like to do, I don't know if we'll actually be able to pull it off, is to basically ban cell phones at the table. And ban laptops for anyone who isn't actively using it to support the game. Because what ends up happening is people get distracted, and if you're distracted, well, you're just setting yourself up for disaster with high-level play because you really need to be focused. But that's probably going to be coming up in September, and I'm looking forward to NewcomCon. I think a late September NewcomCon would be a nice kind of break after the start of the semester and getting through all of the craziness that that entails. So I thought I'd give you a quick update on my summer reading list. It's actually going really, really well. I've gotten through four books, The Lathe of Heaven, Wizard's First Rule, The Subtle Knife, and The Golden Globe. And I have a link to my thoughts on those four books up on Nuketown. Or let's say I should have a link to the article that discusses these four books up on Nuketown. It's a new off-the-shelf column, and man, I haven't had an off-the-shelf column in months, so it was really nice to kind of get back into that particular groove. Overall, I think of those books, I probably enjoyed Lathe of Heaven and The Subtle Knife the most. Wizard's First Rule is just kind of a really weird, really long book, and it didn't really make me want to read the rest of the books in the series, but check out the off-the-shelf column for more on that. Now, my list actually inspired some other folks to do some summer reading. Tim Knight from Hero Press has put together his own summer reading list, including the Stainless Steel Rat's Revenge by Harry Harrison, Boxing Stories by Robert E. Howard, The Devil's Cape by Rob Rogers, and a bunch of other stuff. It's actually quite an extensive list and a good mix, so go check it out. There's a link to it in the show notes. Also, Doug Rapson of Geek Acres dropped me an email to know that he was also inspired by my reading list and has begun his own summer reading initiative with I Am Spock by Leonard Nimoy. So have at it, guys. I'm glad to hear you're on board with the whole summer reading thing. I think it's just a fun thing to do. I had a conversation on Nuketown about this in the comments thread where people asked basically, well, why have a summer reading list? I mean, what's the point? Why do it in the summer? Why not do it some other time? And my answer to this was basically because I have the time and it's something of a tradition. So back when I was in high school, summer was basically when I could do my reading instead of what everybody else wanted me to read. When I got into college, it was kind of the same thing. When I graduated from college, it was kind of a tradition. And hey, you know, I may have been working, but I still had summer vacations, you know, the chance to escape to the beach and, you know, probably a week or two of good solid reading there. And now that I have kids, I find that I need to make myself read. Although I really enjoy reading, I've always loved reading, it can be hard when you have kids to find the time to do it. And I think just like National Novel Writing Month, it's something that you have to make the time to do. And thus, I am making the time to do it and enjoying it. Not all the books I've read have been spectacular, but they have been a nice diversion from an otherwise very, very busy summer.
Are your players unfocused? Do you have nothing planned? Don't know what to do?
Maybe we can help.
TheGameMasterShow.com.
So I figured I'd start off NetHeads with a little bit more reading. Dark Horse Presents has a preview of Solomon Kane up on their MySpace page, which is myspace.com/Dark Horse Presents. The link will be in the show notes. Actually, the link directly to a Solomon Kane thing is in the show notes because it's a little bit hard to find when you just go to the MySpace page. But anyway, this is a preview of the new comic book they have coming out, Solomon Kane. Involving the Nightcomers, which are some raiders who are attacking a small village in France. For those of you who don't know Solomon Kane, he's another one of Robert E. Howard's kind of iconic heroes. He is a Puritan who is filled with righteous rage and goes around fighting the forces of evil, more specifically the forces of supernatural evil that haunt the dark and strange places of 1600s. So it's not quite my cup of tea. I'm not quite sure where I feel about Solomon Kane. I'm not a hugely religious guy, so I don't get into it from that angle. I do like the whole righteous fury thing that he brings with him, but I don't know. I think I'm going to give it a try when it shows up on the stands. I think the story was pretty good, fairly self-contained. It wasn't exactly spectacular, but it was a pretty good supernatural story. I think it's worth checking out. I'll be reading more Solomon Kane later this summer when I get into Robert E. Howard's weird tales, including the Skull of the Moon, or no, Moon of Skull. I can't remember what the title of it is. But anyway, I'll be talking about it more in an upcoming podcast. Something else I wanted to talk about is PodCamp Philly, which is coming up on September 6th and 7th at Temple University. I'm hoping to go this year. I have to clear it with all the appropriate people first, including, of course, my wife, Sue. But I had a lot of fun at PodCamp Philly last year, and I think it should be a good time this year as well. I'd love to get more involved this year and try and get some podcasting for higher ed tracks together. And who knows, maybe even a science fiction / geeky session together as well. But in any case, it's coming up in September, and you can find out more about it by going to podcampphilly.pbwiki.com. Now, I've been on a huge Star Wars role-playing game kick lately, and this is mostly because there is the new source book coming out in August called Knights of the Old Republic, which is a computer game that my friends and I just loved. We thought it was an awesome setting for a Star Wars game where you can basically touch on all the themes that show up in Star Wars, but to do it in a way that doesn't muck about with the original trilogy, or even the prequel trilogy if you particularly like that. It's just kind of a nice sandbox place where you can be that hero, but not have to try to explain why there's another Jedi running around in addition to Skywalker. So it's a great setting, and we've long discussed that, hey, this would be a pretty cool place to run a Star Wars role-playing game. And we talked about it even more after the Star Wars Saga Edition came out when we play-tested it for my sci-fi.com review. So with this new source book coming out, well, we're all getting excited about Star Wars again. So I've been going around and looking for some Star Wars role-playing game links. I have a page up on Nuketown that details all of the sites that I found that deal with the Star Wars role-playing game, particularly the Saga Edition, which is the latest and greatest version that came out from Wizards of the Coast. And I guess the thing I like about Star Wars Saga the most is that it's kind of a nice halfway point between regular Dungeons & Dragons and, or Sather, sorry, Dungeons & Dragons 3rd Edition and Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition. It simplifies the skill system, but it also retains a good deal of flexibility in the form of talent trees, which you can see the beginnings of 4th edition powers in the talent trees in Star Wars, but I like how you have so much more flexibility when it comes to the talent trees in Star Wars, because you're able to cherry pick talents, which are basically special abilities, from any class that you belong to, and multi-classing still truly means something in the Star Wars role-playing game. So I think ultimately it has some of the improvements that you wanted from 4th edition, but still retains that kind of custom ability. the crunchiness and the detail that my friends like. So I'm hoping to run a campaign probably sometime this fall. We'll see. It's still a lot of speculation going on within the gaming group. But again, more on that later. I did want to talk about two sites, or rather two podcasts, that I found for the Star Wars role-playing game. The first is Order 66 Podcast, which you can find at d20radio.com, which is a fan-created podcast for the Star Wars Saga Edition. They've got a whole bunch of episodes together. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to listen to them yet, but they've had interviews with some of the designers, and it looks to be pretty cool. They mix in some humor into it, and I don't know how successful that is overall, but I am definitely looking forward to queuing these guys up on my iPod. The other thing that came out recently is the official Star Wars role-playing game podcast, which was released by Wizards of the Coast. You can find it at www.wizards.com/Star Wars, and there is unfortunately no RSS feed yet, but there is episode one that you can go and just download the MP3 for, and it has two of the designers for the game talking about Saga Edition, how to run a campaign, the idea of running a series of short arcs versus running the sort of mega campaign that just kind of is ongoing. And I thought it was really good. I'm looking forward to the next podcast because one of the things that I enjoyed about the D&D podcast is getting into the game mechanics and talking about the decisions that they made and that sort of thing. And I'm looking forward to them doing that with Saga Edition as well. In this particular podcast, they got into kind of the meat of the talent trees and how having these talent trees that characters could pick from took a lot of the pressure off the need to create prestige classes, which, you know, if you played 3rd edition Dungeons & Dragons, you know there are a gazillion prestige classes. And what talent trees allow them to do is easily give people more options for their character, but leave prestige classes for something that's really new and something that really needs its own game mechanic. So I thought that was a nice observation and really just kind of, again, bump me up for the whole Star Wars role-playing game. So check out those podcasts. Once again, you can find the links to them in the show notes. There's one last game note I wanted to talk about, which is Monsteropolis, which is coming out from, why can't I remember the name of the company that's producing this? Fortunately, I have the internet. Privateer Press, there we go. This is a battle between giant monsters for world domination. Factions include the Martian Menace, Planet Eaters, Guard, which is like the super-powered battle suits provided by the UN to fight these monsters, the Pterosaurs, which are, of course, oversized dinosaurs, the Lords of Cthulhu, which, of course, is Cyclopean madness in the form of, well, giant monsters, and then the Shadow Sun Syndicate, which is apparently some sort of criminal organization out to create their own giant menaces. Looks pretty cool. You can find out more about it at monsterpocalypse.com. I'm not going to spell it out. It's the link's in the show notes. But I like the idea that they're selling these giant monsters that will do battle against one another on your dining room table, and they're actually selling the buildings included in the booster sets, which is kind of cool. So you'll be able to create this whole cityscape from it. I don't know that I would get into this as much as I have, say, HeroClix. I don't know that I have the time for another collectible game, but I think I got to pick up at least one or two boosters just to see what it looks like.
There was another guy named Newbie, and he played the entire game, and the DM never paid attention to him. He never rolled a single die. He just randomized numbers in his head and just said, "I'll roll a 16. And then he would look at his character sheet and say, "All right, I hit armor class 5. Okay, you miss. Next time, you just make up another number." It's an odd game. Cannon Puncture Podcast, for the odd gamer in all of us.
That is about it for Nuketown Radioactive. Whew, I feel like I've been talking for an hour, but it's only been about 30 minutes. I guess that's probably because I've been talking way too fast because I'm excited about all the stuff that's been on the podcast. But in any case, I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm always looking for feedback. You can send it to me at nuketown@gmail.com. Episode number 71 will be a special episode of Radioactive because it will be dedicated entirely to Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition. My review of the game, a roundup of some other reviews and commentary from other podcasters and bloggers and such out on the web. And it should be a good show. It's going to be a tough show because I think 4E, well, Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition is a tough game. It's a tough game to love, and it's a tough game to really kind of sort your feelings out about, because there's stuff that's cool about the mechanics, And then there's stuff that's just so radically different from what came before that it's just, it's hard to think of it as D&D sometimes. And other times, yeah, it just seems like a natural fit. And I think the hardest thing of all is kind of working through it as a gaming group and trying to decide, you know, is this something we want to upgrade to? And what role would this have in our campaign? And what does it mean to our campaign if we don't upgrade to D&D 4E and we stick with 3.5 or we go with Pathfinder or something like that? So should be an interesting show. You can tune back in probably in about a week or two. It's going to take me a little while to get the review together, but I'm hoping to get it out sometime in July.